The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast, now part of the Agile Brand Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I am so glad you're here. I empower leaders to delight their customers, and I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights, wisdom, and practical tips that you can use immediately. I'm also excited to announce the Trusted Guide Roadmap Masterclass for CX leaders who struggle with executive buy-in and are ready to go beyond CX fundamentals. The Masterclass gives you proven frameworks and takes you step-by-step through a four-step model that will move you past the frustration of not getting your work done. It's unique because it's live, interpersonal, hands-on, and we give you tools and templates to help you build your CX roadmap. To learn more, visit empoweredcx.com. That's empoweredcx.com. And now, on to the show. Well, this is kind of an extra special podcast episode today. I am so honored to have Judy Wolf, who is Dr. Judy Wolf, an emergency room physician who has migrated part of her expertise into the world of customer experience manager, and she is the associate chief experience officer at the Cleveland Clinic. She's been doing that since 2020, and she has led global advancements in patient experience metrics within really complex organizational structures. As a medical director for Cleveland Clinic Community Paramedicine and Urgent Dispatch, Judy has led teams in implementing best practices for high reliability care. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I am so excited to have you and learn more about you. Could you give a sort of a brief background to the audience of kind of your background and then how you got involved and what you're doing now?
Sure. So I started in emergency medicine practice in 2000 when I graduated from medical school at the University of Buffalo. I did my residency training also at the University of Buffalo and then worked in probably about a dozen different emergency departments through the ensuing 15 years, caring for patients in academic centers, large urban centers, little tiny freestandings, rural locations. So I really had the opportunity to learn about what makes patients tick. What do they want out of an encounter? How do we care for them effectively? And then I was lucky enough to get a medical director position with the Cleveland Clinic to lead an emergency department in 2015. Did that for a few years. Also took on responsibilities of developing a service line. So urgent dispatch is one of my babies. Absolutely missed that care. But what we did was we deployed paramedics and advanced practice providers. So nurse practitioners, PAs, will go on demand to patients' houses when they needed relatively urgent care and weren't able to get out of the house to the ED. We developed that and built that into a very successful service line. And then I was able to move into my associate chief role at the clinic, where I started out as a regional chief, and I now have global responsibility across 11 time zones, from the bright lights of Nevada all the way to the bright lights of Abu Dhabi. And we have hospitals in Abu Dhabi, in London, in Ohio, and in Florida. So it's been an incredible ride over the last 24 years.
And just such a fascinating background and to think about being an ER doctor. I mean, most of us can't imagine. I told you when we first met that I would have just passed out with the first patient.
Yeah, I passed out on my first day of medical school, actually.
So
we're in the same boat there. Yeah, we were in...
Now I feel better.
Right? Don't feel bad. I was 20 years old. I was a little kid when I went to medical school because I finished college early. And the first day in gross anatomy, they opened up all the boxes with the cadavers and I fell flat on the floor. And I am still living now. I'm 24 years later. One of my colleagues nicknamed me Doogie Howser. And he still calls me Doogie, even though I'm almost 50 years old. And he still makes fun of me for that. It's okay.
Well, tell me about what got you interested in the world of, let's do some level setting here. So customer experience, patient experience, help us with some definitions and how the clinic views PX and the evolution of PX at the clinic.
Yeah. So PX really started on a national basis in 2006. With the release of HCAHPS. So that is our hospital consumer assessment of healthcare providers and systems. So that's the survey that is the basis for the metrics that are most important to the organization. And that was released in 2006. The story goes is that our former CEO, Dr. Toby Cosgrove, who was the first of his kind to set up a patient experience lead at a global system like the Cleveland Clinic. He was at Harvard and talking about the Cleveland Clinic when a young woman put her hand up and said, you know, my father was thinking about having heart surgery, but he went to a system other than the Cleveland Clinic, even though you've been number one for many years, because we heard you don't have empathy. Do you have empathy, Dr. Cosgrove? And that really took back. And he, you know, he thought about it and he looked at our results and he determined, you know, we have an opportunity here. What patients want most is to trust their healthcare provider and system. And to have trust, you have to have logic. You need to know what you're talking about. We do that really easily. You know, that's intrinsic. We're pretty smart doctors. We'll tell you. We know it, right? But you also have to have that empathy. You have to care about me and you have to have authenticity, right? You have to be real with me. Don't tell me any lies. Don't shade me. You know, give me the truth. And we found that although we had some degree of authenticity and we had plenty of logic, where we were failing was in the empathy. And so a number of different systems were developed in order to build empathy organizationally, to build that into the fabric of our culture. So it started really with communication training for everybody. It started also with renaming employees caregivers. How powerful is that? You're not just somebody who shows up to work and punches a card. Now you are somebody who gives care every single day. And so the cultural changes that Dr. Cosgrove started have, you know, really been part of our fabric now for many, many years. And that's the culture that we lean into every single day.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. And for those people listening, it probably wouldn't be the first time you've heard me talk about the trust equation. But Charlie Green, who wrote The Trusted Advisor, said there are four variables that have to do with trustworthiness, which is a word that you mentioned, trust, as something you are seeking as a hospital. And those four variables are credibility, reliability, intimacy, and self-orientation, which is the inverse, right? You want the inverse. So and as I think about the knowledge that you shared, well, that would really go toward credibility. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the reliability was the follow through and all that. And then that whole right side of the equation, which is the intimacy and the self-orientation. Well, if you're not completely authentic or you don't appear to have empathy, that could be low on self-orientation on that score and also low on intimacy, which is a lot connected to empathy and this idea of psychological safety. Can I trust you from the standpoint of, do you care about me? Do you make it a safe space for me? And I guess, you know, there's probably no better case study than in a hospital.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. When we look at our key drivers of likelihood to recommend, which is our true north in patient experience, that's what our, that's how we're measured and how others talk about us, right? So when we look at that, what's most important to patients is communication, it's empathy, and teamwork. Those are the most important things to our patients. That's what drives likelihood to recommend. And so when we wake up in the morning and we talk about what initiatives are most important among many, on the HCAHPS survey, we're asking dozens of questions. So we assess lots of things from, you know, was your transporter nice, to did you have a place to park your car, all the way through, how did your doctor communicate with you? Did they listen to you? Did your nurse listen to you? Did they show concern for your special needs? That's what's most important. And that's what we lean into in terms of effort and initiatives when there's so much to drive.
So I just want to double tap on a few of the gems that you just shared, so we don't roll past them for our audience. You shared a couple that, number one is the doctor didn't just put a few people through the communication training, Dr. Cosgrove, he put everybody through it.
Right? That's right.
Everybody had to get level set on what we're talking about. Two is changing the name of the titles of the jobs to caregiver. I mean, wow, that's going to make you think about your own role differently.
Oh, absolutely. It's inclusive, right? We're all caregivers at the Cleveland Clinic. And also with the training, with the physician training that we did, you know, that was a hard sell. I mean, he burned a ton of political capital with that, I'm sure, you know, because we put the most genius surgeons through that training. And, you know, I think the key for us for the success was having their peers be their educators. So it was other genius surgeons embracing the ideal model and talking about the value and listening and being part of that training. And that was really fundamental to getting, you know, a lot of big egos to think differently and to think about how they could connect more effectively with patients when they're training and their experience as people has been really just focused on those technical skills. And so that required a huge amount of change management and was incredibly effective in making the Cleveland Clinic one of the top hospitals in the world, not just at the clinical skills, the quality and the safety, but also in the patient experience.
Yeah. Excellent. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about, well, or touch on, is your focus on loyalty drivers. So not only are you measuring NPS, but you're doing the hard work that says, okay, what's driving the NPS? And then action, you know, creating action from those insights. So I want to ask you two questions around action to the insights. One, and this is two questions. One is the action that you then put in place based on these loyalty drivers. You mentioned empathy, teamwork, communication. But going back to this is a question I imagine if I'm a listener and you just hit on something that some people are saying, I wish I could do what they did, which is, believe it or not, you know, doctors aren't the only ones with egos. And people who work in, you know, whether it's a government agency, whether it's a bank, whether it's an insurance company, whether it's a manufacturing company, tech company, whatever, there are egos involved. And how do you get the encouragement, the buy-in, the cooperation of those, you know, rock star surgeons and doctors to participate in this? How does that happen?
Well, we start with data. And we focus on the patient. So that's kind of a two-pronged approach. So number one, focusing on the patient and their needs and the value proposition to the physician. So whenever we ask our physicians or our nurses to do something different than, you know, maybe something extra, we always couch it within safety, quality, language. So when I communicate more effectively with the patient and I can teach them about their new medication or their condition, they're more likely to adhere to the care plan that I put in place for them. They're going to buy what I have to sell, right? And then they're going to get better care because they're listening to me and they're, you know, developing that homegoing structure where they can continue that plan in my absence. So that's part number one. Part number two is really thinking about the data and the science. So a lot of the things that we recommend that you do, things like bedside shift report, where the nurses, when they're changing shifts, they come together, day shift and the night shift, come together to the bedside to talk to and with the patient and to exchange information right in front of them. Same thing with our initiative at the Cleveland Clinic, plan of care visits. So plan of care visit is that daily round where the doctor, the nurse, and the patient all meet together at the bedside. We have incredible data about this. So this improves communication and patient experience, but it also improves safety. It improves the quality of care. It reduces things like readmissions, which we see as a failure in the practice of hospital medicine. When somebody is sick and we're supposed to make them better, and then they're supposed to stay better. But if they have to come back to the hospital and they're sick again a few days later, we didn't do our job the way we're supposed to. So when we look at these key initiatives that every physician intrinsically understands, and we can supply data around it, if you do things just a little bit differently, if you communicate more clearly, if you explain a little bit better, if you listen better, you're going to have a better outcome. That's the sort of thing that helps change minds and hearts.
Well, and you mentioned change management, and that's, I love how you illustrated that, and it makes sense to think about the patient first and then to use the data, but you tied the why, you know, of why we're doing this change to what you hope would be something the doctors would also value, their why, right?
Absolutely.
Good. Yeah. Good work. I mean,
it doesn't happen without the doctors believing in it, right? People will say that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, but really we don't know unless we get that feedback. And so when we get the feedback from our patients that they're having an experience that meets their needs and expectations, that's much more helpful.
What would you describe as, this is just thought coming to my head because, you know, hospitals, sometimes they're geographical monopolies. Sometimes they're, you know, patients don't really see another choice. Sometimes they're brought into an ER when they're unconscious, so they really didn't have a choice. But what's the risk of not doing anything?
The risk of not doing anything is that the elective care disappears. And so, you know, some patients don't have a choice because of insurance or geographic monopoly, although in most major cities in the United States, you have lots of choice. You can go to any number of hospitals. We definitely value our elective care. So in the reimbursement models across the United States, we get paid relatively more generously for care that is scheduled. So surgical care, things like total joint replacements, heart surgeries, obstetrical care, for which many people plan, you know, months or weeks in advance, and they have a lot of choice. The other part of this is we are an international destination for healthcare. We're competing not against our local hospitals, but we're competing against Mayo. We're competing against New York Presbyterian, Houston Methodist, you know, Johns Hopkins, Mass General. There are a lot of places that patients can elect to go. And so we also see ourselves, you know, as an international destination. You can get Cleveland Clinic care in Abu Dhabi, or you can get Cleveland Clinic care right here in Cleveland, Ohio. So there's lots and lots of competition across the world. And we think of ourselves, like I said, as more of a global attractor of care, not just a hyperlocal state. And if we do not provide the kind of world-class care we promise, patients will go elsewhere. They're going to go to Hopkins. They're going to go to Mass General. They're not going to come to us in Cleveland.
Yeah. So there are definitely choices that they have, and knowing where you stand and who your competitors are and what choices customers, you know, in this case, patients have, it's really important. I wanted to ask you, when you think about hospital leadership, what are some of the biggest myths that are true relative to patient experience, and what kind of friction does that end up causing for patients? Like oftentimes there are leaders that have, you know, a theory or a myth about patients and how they ought to be treated. And this is the mantra. This is what you always hear. And yet it's a myth. It's not true. And it ends up causing issues down the road for, you know, in the business world, it's customers, and your world, it's patients.
So, you know, I think one of the key myths, at least in emergency medicine, as a clinician, I can tell you, is that patients come in with a demand for something specific. So let's say they want an MRI or antibiotics, and those things aren't necessarily appropriate for the environment of care. Like, you don't need an MRI for your knee. You can get that done as an outpatient. That's not an emergency medical condition, right? And so a lot of the time, at least as providers, we get afraid that if we say no, patients will get mad at us. And, you know, I think the important thing for us to understand as clinicians is that's not necessarily what they're coming in with. Like they may say that they want X, Y, and Z, but what they really want is validation. They want reassurance, and they want a good plan in place. And so sort of, you know, at least in our communication style, sort of getting down to, you know, what are you most afraid of? You know, what do you think is going on? You know, trying to understand the patient perspective is crucially important. And so that's what we train on. That's what we train our clinicians on, is really asking the questions in a way that is empathetic and understanding, but really gets down to what is truly driving the request for something specific.
That's really good. And it's a good lesson, I think. As a consultant or a coach, you know, I remember hearing advice that said, when you're a consultant, often the reason or the stated purpose that a client brings you in is not really the client that needs to be the problem that needs to be solved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you plenty of times people will come in and demand a full body MRI because they're worried they have cancer. And the right answer to that query is that's not what you know, this is emergency room. This isn't what we're here for. Because that's a lot of my, you know, that's what my colleagues would say a lot of the time. It's like, wow, that sounds like you're really frustrated and concerned. Tell me what worries you the most, right? And so developing the line of questioning that helps uncover the true agenda and worry, and then responding to that with the right answer that's appropriate for the clinical situation. A lot of the time, we think that patients just ask for, you know, medically unnecessary things, and we don't know how to handle that, and then they leave angry. There's a better way to handle those concerns.
Mm-hmm. So there are people listening that are at the very early stages, earlier down the road than you are in your CX journey, who are wondering what were some of the challenges that you encountered when you first started out and that you faced, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah. So for me, the first challenge I faced was understanding a huge matrix organization. And so my response to that was to get out and to meet people where they were. So I went to every single hospital I possibly could reach. The only Cleveland Clinic hospital I haven't been to yet is Abu Dhabi, but I am definitely going to make it there at some point. but, you know, driving across the entire organization, all over the Treasure Coast of Florida, and from Ashtabula County, Ohio, to Avon, Ohio, and all the way down to Tuscarora County, where we have Union Hospital, and spending time. Because every single hospital was acquired at a different point in the Cleveland Clinic's timeline. So they're all unique. They're all different. They have different makeups and models of staff. Some have many, many employed physicians, and some have only exclusively private physicians who don't have a paycheck coming from the Cleveland Clinic. They have a very different business model than our employed physicians do. So getting into every single hospital and environment of care, walking the halls, talking to patients, talking to nurses, talking to doctors, walking around. And I went out with our environmental services staff. I didn't understand, you know, when I first started, I had a vague understanding of environmental services, but I really didn't know what it meant to be an EVS worker and the role they had to play in patient experience. Well, our EVS workers have a script that they use as they clean a patient's room. and they explain every step of the way precisely what they're doing. One thing they realized is that when they go into the bathroom, patients often didn't recognize they were cleaning the bathroom. So they put little, you know, hotel strips across the toilet that indicate that it was cleaned, and they explained to the patient how they clean the bathroom and how important it is to them personally that we're always clean at the Cleveland Clinic. And when they started doing this in a highly reliable way, they saw their EVS scores go through the roof. It's absolutely incredible. So, you know, understanding those intricacies of the different operational units of the hospital and how they work, as well as understanding each individual staff model and hospital set of challenges, was really important to me. And I think that's the sort of thing you can extrapolate to any business. You know, tell me more about my customers. What's important to them? You know, what worries them? How do they function? I think that's the sort of thing. You got to get out there. You can't be behind a Zoom meeting 8 hours a day and expect that that's going to work out for you. You have to actually get out there and walk the halls and figure out what makes these places tick.
Yeah, great advice. Another gem is, if you're a CX leader, get out there, get out from behind your desk and go visit and talk and really listen to what other people have to say. And until you really fully hear in an empathetic way, don't make any judgments about what you think the solution should be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a pitfall for sure. You need to be really careful. I think in those first 90 days in particular, spending more time listening and learning and less time developing solutions is crucially important.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, because you and I talked a little bit about some of the work that you did there to improve PX, CX. And I wonder if you could share a story about how you did help turn around sort of a common patient issue. What was an approach that you took, and maybe you considered looking at the problem a different way, maybe measuring it a little differently?
Yeah, so we found in 2018 that communication scores, particularly with nurses and physicians, were challenged. And so our team developed a patient-centric or person-centric approach to this by developing something called plan of care visits. So traditionally in the hospital, the doctor goes to see the patients every single day. That's their job, right? They go and talk to them a little bit, give them some information, examine them, write orders, and leave. Well, what they weren't doing was including the nurse in a highly reliable way. And the nurse is the most important person in the hospital to the patient. They're their interpreter, their translator of medical jargon. They're the person caring for them and ensuring that they understand what's going on. And so we determined that that was a key defect in our care. So we developed a structure to, you know, to really align these providers of care every single day with the patient and or their family members, if that was appropriate. So we developed a structure and we taught people and we measured it. We measured it both by asking our care providers, our nurses and doctors and advanced practice providers to document that in the electronic medical record to attest that they did this visit every day. And we also asked patients to tell us, did it happen? You know, how frequently did it happen and whether it was helpful. And our goal with plan of care visits was really to kind of go through a checklist of information with every patient every day. What's going on with me? What new medications or treatments do I have? What am I waiting for in terms of additional diagnostic testing and consults? When is my proposed discharge date? And then wind it all up with something called a teach back, where really we kind of, in a non-judgmental way, sort of quiz the patient as to what they understand. And the thing with this is 50% of the time, they remember 50% of what we have to tell them. So that teach back is really important to confirm understanding. So we have this process and we've been teaching and measuring, pushing the envelope through the last 6 years. We started in 2018 with a pilot. 2019, we rolled it out across the entire organization. 2020, we had a little bit of a pandemic, but we didn't stop. It became even more important to us to do plan of care visits in a highly reliable way. And even if we couldn't get everybody in the room, we used technology to connect people to get those visits completed. And as the pandemic waned, we really dug into this even more deeply to figure out, you know, how do we make this easier for people? How do we do it more reliably and do it in a higher quality way. And we found that when we do it 63% of the time, 63, the bar is in the basement, right? Patients don't have high expectations for us. But when patients say it's helpful to them to understand their plan 63% of the time, that is correlated with a top decile likelihood to recommend. So that's where we're pushing towards as an organization, is to really kind of lift that even higher and to do it better and more frequently in a highly reliable way every single time, every single patient, every single day.
And Judy, I just want to tap on another gem there that you shared, which is connected to this loyalty driver of communication, which is fascinating on a number and a couple of different ways. One is, I think we can really underestimate its importance. You know, there's so many different things you can do, and people try and throw money at a problem. New equipment, more people, more technology, better systems, et cetera. And here what we're talking about is just having a conversation with the patient, making sure they're clear, you know, on their plan. What is their plan to teach? I love this idea of a teach back. I mean, that could end up being the name of this episode. Because it's not just in the medical world. It happens everywhere, this idea of check in with the customer. But the idea of whatever that is for you and your organization, that communication piece, that can go a long way. And you mentioned earlier also change management. I mean, there's all sorts of frameworks that are built in communication, whether it's Cotter or ADCAR or others, that talk about communication really at every stage of the change management cycle. So really powerful what you shared about communication.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, communication is the core of what we do. We break down patient experience really into transactions and interactions. And where we've historically done a lot of work is in those interactions, in the person-to-person, face-to-face, quality of communication, understanding, empathy work. Where we are pivoting this year at the Cleveland Clinic is really to look at the burden of suffering as a consequence of poorly timed or friction-filled transactions, right? So things like, I got a bill in the mail, but they billed me for the wrong thing, or they didn't process this through my insurance correctly. So I have a $21,000 bill that I shouldn't have to pay. Now I have to deal with it and call somebody, but I can't get a hold of anybody. You know, it's that sort of transaction that's, you know, full of friction and causes an incredible amount of human suffering. It causes, you know, we call as like barriers to care, you know, and we are measuring that with a custom question on our HCAHPS survey. Actually, every survey type that we have, we've embedded this question since 2020, is tell me about the ease to get the care you needed at Cleveland Clinic. Was it very good, fair, poor, or very poor? And our goal is to push that very good top box metric as high as we possibly can go this year.
Yeah. So you identified ease as a driver of loyalty and customer likelihood to recommend.
Oh, it's incredible. It's not even a formal question asked by the government on HCAHPS, right? This is our own, custom question we came up with ourselves. Ease has the top Pearson correlation to likelihood to recommend, far more so than any other question we ask that we're mandated to ask, far more than nursing or doctor communication. Ease is a big deal to patients.
So another gem there is identify what your key drivers are. And we mentioned this earlier. There's something I want to wind back to that you said. There's another gem. You're just throwing them out too fast, Judy. But it keeps coming back to me, so I got to say it again. This idea of the customer, the patient who comes in, who comes into an ER room and wants an MRI on their body because they think they have cancer. What a great illustration. I mean, sorry they feel that way. But you have one doctor, the typical knee-jerk reaction, this would be any human, would be to say, wait a minute, we're in an emergency room. We don't really treat patients for cancer. That's more of a long-term illness. And the other, which you just said casually, but I imagine this was part of a very thoughtful, strategic empathy training, which you said, gee, that sounds really frustrating. Can you tell me more about that? Well, that didn't take $1 million to solve that problem. That's just smart, empathetic, and it may not be. I'm a strategic thinker. It's both a blessing and a curse. For those people who are like me, it may not come naturally. So you are teaching people how to treat patients better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually, depending on my audience, when I teach residents, I talk to them about hacks, how to hack your shift, how to hack your difficult patient interaction. And it's exactly stuff like this. It's, you know, patients, like the key to listening is for patients to feel that they're heard. And so one of the key ways you can do that is to repeat back to them exactly what they said. It's not that hard. You don't want to sound like a parrot, right? But you want to summarize, you know, so what I understand you're saying is X, Y, you're very concerned about the possibility that you could have cancer. And then you respond to the, you know, with empathy to the emotion. I can imagine that's very frightening for you. Boom. That took 10 seconds, cost you a dime, and you have just started your way down a positive interaction, as opposed to the knee jerk. Oh, I can't do an MRI. You don't need an MRI. Why are you here for an MRI? I mean, that is what's going through my head sometimes. But, you know, I kind of put the brakes on it and then reformulate it in a way that expresses empathy for this person's concerns and conditions. I mean, I think we understand in the ER, everybody there is having a bad day. I mean, the caregivers themselves included in that sometimes. But the patients are all there because they're worried, scared, they feel bad, they're in pain. So if you don't respond with empathy as your first knee-jerk reaction, you are starting off on the wrong foot. You are going to lose, and it's going to be tough for you. And when you hack your shift, using empathy, recognizing emotion, responding in a way that shows that you're listening, using the right body language, right? The open body language, not being judgmental, those things are really important. And that's how you win in this space.
So if you're listening and you may be saying, well, I'm not on the front lines. My business is a middleware, or I'm a wholesaler. I don't have the principles are the same. I mean, you see some of the best companies out there doing this with even chatbots. And I'm not a big fan of chatbots because most of them aren't done very well at all. But even in I was doing TurboTax. I was doing my taxes. And there's little prompts that come up and say, congratulations, you know, good job, Mark, you're almost there. Hey, you're 2/3 of the way done, way to go. Do you need help? On my Toyota, I'm driving and it's got the safety thing. And I notice, like, if I accidentally hit a bump, like a drunk bump in the middle of the side, it'll say, do you want to stop for coffee? Do you need a break? You know, so those are little empathetic ways that you can use, not just if you're not on the front line, because we hear that a lot. Well, I'm not on the front line. We sell, you know, we sell wholesale insurance to resellers, so we don't really have that. Well, the principles still apply.
Yeah. I mean, in call centers, I recently called about my LG washer having an issue. And so I called and I was kind of hot. I was mad. I just got this stupid thing. Why is it already breaking down? So I was a little bit on edge. And the LG call center person got me calmed down and feeling much better about the brand by saying, you know what? I know you're having a hard day. This sounds so difficult for you. We're going to help you with this and we're going to resolve your concern. I was like, oh my God, they just used my tricks on me. They just hacked their shift the same way I hack my shifts. But it worked. Incredibly important. This kind of communication style is so important for us to be able to connect with other human beings. And if whatever you do, if you connect with other people, knowing the science of emotion and the science of communication will benefit you.
Yeah. What a great, so many great messages. We're gonna land the plane here. I could talk to you all day, but I want to make sure we didn't miss any key recommendations, or you mentioned hacks, that either CX or PX leaders, you know, we talked about so many great things. Is there anything we missed that you want to share?
I would say focus on very few crucially important things, especially for us in healthcare. We in patient experience always get accused of chasing, you know, the shiny new object. And it's easy to do because there's questions we ask. You know, many of them have absolutely no impact on likelihood to recommend. We ask about food service, quiet at night. Those aren't key drivers. The key drivers to our business model really are significantly aligned with our ultimate performance. So having a true north, what's your metric that's most important? Then doing just a couple of things that really drive that key metric and kind of focus on no more than three things at a time, and ideally one or two, just to kind of do things, do them well, and then sustain that change. Because where we really fail, it's not the change management that fails for us in healthcare, it's the change sustainment that really is the thing that drops off, right? People see that they're starting to improve and they're like, all right, I'm good. I can just let this ride. And then they see their scores tank and it's like, well, you just had to keep going, right? That hard work has to continue. You can't see a little bit of an increase and then say, I'm good and walk away from it. And I think that's really an important piece of any improvement model. Stick with it. PDCA, right? Plan, do, check, act. Improve things as you go along and then sustain that improvement. That's how you win long term.
Great, great message. So grateful to have an ER doctor, part of our CX community, making a difference in the world, literally every day in the emergency room, but globally through Cleveland Clinic and all the work that you're doing. Last question I have for all my guests I'm going to ask you, which is, what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Oh, I've got so much advice for her. you know, I think be patient. That's something that has not ever been a virtue of mine in my entire life. And, you know, as you can imagine, as an ER doctor, I'm used to snapping my fingers, giving a dose of epinephrine, getting the heart started again, you know? So I don't have a lot of patience, but if I could counsel my 20-year-old self, I'd say just stick with it because you're going to do great things. And I'm really proud of you already.
That's an empathetic conversation to have with yourself. That's great. Well, I just thank you so much. If our just so many gems, so enlightening, and so many transferable messages and lessons for people, no matter what area or industry they're in. Great stuff. Judy, if there's someone who would like to get a hold of you to reach out, what would be the best way?
You can reach me on LinkedIn. I'm Dr. Judy Wolf. Please message me. Happy to discuss anything that we talked about. Or, you know, my two favorite things in life right now are Ease to Get Care, especially how we assessed it. You know, we had no idea what was going on with that, what it meant. There were no benchmarks. So we spent a lot of time data mining using artificial intelligence. So I would love to talk more about that at some point with folks if they're interested. I'm on LinkedIn, so please reach out.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on the show, Judy.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. It's a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up and a lot of other great content. I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on the show in the show notes, and you can find those at my website at empoweredcx.com. That's empoweredcx.com. Also, make sure to check out the other shows in the Agile Brand Podcast Network by going to www.agilebrandguide.com. The Delighted Customers Podcast with Mark Slayton is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.